All right, folks, welcome back to the list. Mountain West Wire Football recap show, Matt. We made it. We got a game, we got five games out of, quietly says, out of six in the books this weekend. Five games. Excellent. MWR.com. Check it out. That's where all of our previews, recaps, news. You have your winners and losers. I have some highlight posts. I'm working on a few other things on this Sunday, late morning, early afternoon. So how'd your first day of viewing experience go, Matt, with five games? Basically all within a couple hours of each other, the doubleheaders going on.
Yeah, it's hard to complain. I guess the only limitation is that I only have Hulu available on two devices at a time. Oh, man. So I had to get creative with the channel flipping, especially in those afternoon games.
Yeah, I guess you have to watch it more of the Mountain West when it's that early afternoon, late evening, whatever. I guess not for you, but you had Michigan, Minnesota, obviously the Mountain West games, a couple others going on.
All in all, though, it's a good problem to have again.
It is a good problem to have. Yeah, it's I have a serious question for you. I haven't watched it yet. I haven't used it yet. I was busy doing stuff, so I kind of recapped games this morning, last night, watching them. How did the – oh, I can't even ask you. No, I was going to ask you Fresno, Hawaii, how'd the app go, but you couldn't use it.
No, so, I admit it didn't have to.
It was on regular TV for you, right?
You know what, though? If you're listening to this podcast and you were one of those people using that Team One Sports app anywhere else on the mainland, let us know how the experience was at MWC Wire on Twitter.
Yeah, I know one person had a small issue they got figured out because I guess the you can't cast it from your device, like your phone, mm-hmm. but it's on, what was it, Roku, Amazon, if your TV has Amazon apps or Apple TV. So there's ways to get on your screen without having to do the screencast workaround instead of a direct light cast. So yeah, let us know. As I say, I'm like, wait, your team played Hawaiian. Also, apologies in advance there as well for that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yes, we'll get to that game. But should we just get started to the first? I guess I'll go into order here because it's a Boise State, Utah State, 42-13. Should we start with the negative 37-yard punt?
You know what? It's kind of symbolic of. I know it's easy to make jokes, and it's kind of like the latest iteration of the fact that Boise State's kind of had some special teams issues off and on mm-hmm. for years now. Like for, you know, they've had Avery Williams and they've had like, you know, Eric Saxe was a very reliable kicker last year. It's just like something like that always pops up, but I think it's kind of emblematic of the fact. And I think that the weekend as a whole really laid this out is that, you know, nobody was perfect this weekend.
Correct.
And, you know, I say that despite the fact that the Broncos went up 28-0 in this game, you know, by halftime, they pretty much had it in control from the get-go. But it, to me, that's kind of like a flashpoint to that larger message where even the teams that looked really good, you know, still have, if not necessarily questions to answer, things to work on, I guess mm-hmm. I would say.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. I wanted to bring it up because I saw it. I'm like, wait a minute. It was just a little bit off the toe and it hit the guy in the backside. He's like, what the heck happened? It's also to note, Boise State's been part of two infamous punt plays in their history. There's one a couple years ago. Do you remember when they played BYU and they went for it like on fourth and whatever long inside like their 5-yard line?
Wasn't that BYU that did that?
Yeah, they tried to do it against Boise State. They attempted.
Yeah.
That's my point. They've been part of two really weird punt plays in the past couple of years. And so I just remember that play. I'm like, oh, we'll just go for it. We're down. We're an rotating nerd. Like, they'll never suspect it. And then, whoops. So there's punting plays. But nobody's perfect. And also one thing we should mention, I was going to bring up right before until I got into it. Players are going to miss games and we don't know why or they won't tell us why. Mm-hmm. Like, I was watching the Nevada game. I actually watched that this morning. I'm like, where's Tua Tagovailoa? He didn't play for some reason. They're missing guys for half a game, offensive linemen out. We've had various games where guys aren't playing for, I'm assuming those are COVID reasons for Nevada, but like Air Force had two offensive linemen not playing, All-American and one of them. So if players aren't playing, we probably don't know. The team probably won't tell you because they want to hide behind a hip or whatever and not hide, but you know what I mean?
I mean, I think it's fair. And that's really kind of the other thing is like, you know, for the performances don't necessarily tell the whole story, you know, because you have to account for who's missing. And I think that with some of the people that you mentioned, it seems like, you know, some of the players who didn't play had a bigger difference than others, you know, like with Utah State, I think I forget who mentioned it, that they had, I want to say like 14 players.
Yes. It was 14 guys
that didn't play. But you know, it's hard to tell, you know, how much of a difference that would have made because, you know, to me, the story of the game, especially early on when Boise State kind of ran and hid with it, was the fact that Utah State's offensive line, for all the experience they had coming back, really looked overmatched by Boise State's kind of new look, kind of made over defensive line. And I think that's a credit to, the Broncos, that it seems like they always have the capacity to reload and things like that. But to me, that was kind of the story off and on, is, this, I think, was maybe the best example of it, but that was something I saw in a few different games this weekend. It was like one side, one line was really having an impact on another. And in some cases, teams were able to adjust and rally. And in this particular case with Utah State, it didn't really seem like they had an answer for it all afternoon long.
No, they got pressured. They had what Boise had 7 TFLs, 3 sacks. And here's the relationship. Like, people are saying this Utah. It's early too, so there's gonna be a lot of overreactions.
Yeah.
A lot of Utah State fans like, this is the worst. Like, this is not last year. It's like, no. They say this could be as bad as what 2015, where they were not good either in that year. And I kind of called it too. Like, Jason Shelley, they brought him in. I'm like, he came from University of Utah, and I even put in like our previews and stuff we talked about or what I've written about throughout these off season, like. He's a guy when he was at Utah, wasn't, yes, they beat Oregon. They went, I think they beat Colorado and they beat somebody else, but it wasn't because of him. It was because when he played at Utah, he had a really good defense. He had good running backs behind him, and he basically managed a game. Utah State doesn't have the talent around them to do that. Their defense wasn't very good, clearly giving up 42 points, 28 in the first half. Look at that last drive. They punt the ball. Would Boise get it with what, 2.5 minutes left? They go down and score because Harsin calls a couple of timeouts when Utah State's moving the ball. Okay, they punt it, save one timeout. They go, what was the 80-something yard drive, 90-yard drive, just about to end the half, something pretty deep. And they don't have the defense to help him out. He's under 50%, 92 yards, interception. It's like, he's a guy, and they brought in Andrew Peasley for, I think, one play. He ran at least once for 2 yards. I remember I was listening to this on the radio in the first half when they brought him in initially. I'm like, okay, he's a sort of a freshman because of whatever you want to call it for red shirt and transfer stuff or incoming guys, whatever they may be, injuries and stuff. But like, he's a guy, he's not going to win you games. And so I get kind of why they brought him in, because I don't know, like, I don't want to dive into it. Would Henry Columbia stayed had Shelley not transferred to Utah State? I don't know, but Columbia's a lot better than Jason Shelley, and I kind of knew Shelley would be just
I
fine.
mean, at least for 1 week, Columbia looked a lot better.
Yeah, at least for 1 week.
He led them to a win over West Virginia down there in Lubbock.
Yeah. And so it's like, I still like Shelley's fine. You'd be excited about him, but I would hold your expectations for after watching him play for those 5 starts. Like, when they played, like the worst football game ever. When they played Washington in the Pac-12 title game, 10 to 3. 10 to 3. Your defense gives up, and I think one of those was a pick six. Your defense in that game gave up 3 points to a Washington team that's pretty good. And Utah can't score a touchdown, and Shelley can't do anything in that game or barely completing over 50%. This is probably worse than that, but it's. They don't have an answer. Like, I like how Jalen Warren's playing well. He had 2 TDs, but only got 3.5, almost 4 yards of carry, just okay. Like, he's going to be a good guy, but what else do they have to keep up? Like, I know Boise State looked really good. Hank Bachmeyer played well, 3 TDs over what, 20-28 passing. George Helony was great on the ground game. Shakir, very worthy to be one of our top players in the conference. What he did, 160 total yards. And I don't know, even when Utah State plays Colorado State or when they play Air Force, if had they had those 14 guys back, I don't know if it would have made a difference, because, like, I don't want to say Utah State rolled over, but man, where's the effort when you're in that second quarter?
I mean, it's really hard to say. I mean, I think if you're looking to point at some concerns that if they can't fix them, they could be in real big trouble. One thing I look at is the fact that they had zero big passing plays.
Yeah, 92 total yards passing. Come on.
And they only had two on the ground, both of which basically came in the third quarter after the game was well out of reach. The offense looked stunted in the first half, and Warren didn't really get it going until there was that fluky punt return, where I think Boise State fans on Twitter had a point where maybe that drive should never have happened, because it looked to me like a fumble, a muffed punt. Didn't it look like that to you?
Yeah, it sort of, yeah.
And I
So,
mean, Boise, could have forced them to, could have forced a three and out, could have forced a turnover, whatever. Couldn't, they could have kept Utah State from scoring on that drive. I mean, to me, that's kind of like a small quirk rather than
Yeah.
anything significant for either side. Like, I think, Utah State's got a lot to work on, and that's kind of what I foresaw of them coming into the season. But if they look like this more often than not, then I think Gary Anderson's going to have a real hot seat sooner rather than later.
I know, it's only what year two, and he's already like, I get, but we see like they're good. And also, did you happen to see the coaches poll rankings that came out moments ago?
I saw that Boise State was receiving votes. They were, what, 29th overall?
Something like that. They're behind Liberty. Okay. Behind Army.
Okay.
Like, there's a couple teams of like, come on, people. The polls are going to be weird. But, like, I don't know. What can Utah State do? Like, they lost a lot of guys. Like, okay, what went right for them? Besides Ward's two touchdowns, like, nothing really seemed to go well for them. Like, Jordan Nathan had, what, two catches for, I think, what, 7 yards? Like, they weren't getting the receivers. Like, Devin Thompson, Tompkins, excuse me, played fairly well, 5 for 37, but no downfield passing. Longest pass was 13 yards, only 3 over 10 yards. Like you said, no big plays. An interception by Jason Shelley. It's like, I don't want to panic, but it's like, it's not looking good, and maybe things will change when they play, who do they got next week, when they play somebody who's not Boise State.
I mean, if you want to look for bright sides, one thing that sticks out to me is the fact that while they were only 8 of 20 on third downs, when they finally started putting themselves in a more consistent position to move the chains, they started having more success on offense. And granted, that didn't happen until the third quarter. But you look at their third down tries in the first half, and they were basically putting themselves behind the eight ball way more often than they should have. Yeah, they were only 2 of 8 on third and longs, which is 9 or more yards. But in that first half, their first drive, 3rd and 13. Later on, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 15, 3rd and 20. But then later in the second half, they started turning it around and they started getting themselves into more manageable situations. And so when I see 5 of 8 on 3rd and short, which is 4 yards or fewer, to me, I think that that speaks to a glimmer of hope. Like especially if the run game can get efficient on 1st and 2nd down, put them in a position to succeed in order to move the chains. They might not necessarily be the most explosive offense. I still kind of have doubts about how much that's going to come around this fall. But I think they have the pieces in place to be an efficient offense. But the offensive line is going to have to do a much better job. And Warren's not going to be able to do everything himself, like whether they want Shelley to use his legs, whether they want to bring in Jason, excuse me, Andrew Peasley as like a Nick Nash type. There's avenues forward, but there's also work to be done.
There is like, do you think the offensive line was the main issue? Like, had the offensive line held up and say Shelley was sacked once in like maybe three TFLs, would that made that much of a difference? Because he wasn't really accurate either.
I mean, yeah, because it seemed like Shelley was running for his life more often than not.
It's
And
true.
that doesn't even account for the fact that they ended up having 7 tackles for loss, the Boise State defense, and 3 sacks.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, yeah, it's and guess what? I saw who they play next week, San Diego State. So it's not getting easier.
Oh,
And
okay.
we'll get to them
All right,
later,
we'll get
but
to them.
that's but what about Boise State? Like I was mildly surprised. Well, no, I won't say mildly surprised. I just don't like playing two quarterbacks a lot. Jake Sears came in early a little bit, but like, or excuse me, Jack Sears. He came in, that's fine. Like, at a Boise State, like, everything they did in this game, like, Bachmeier played extremely well, which you expected to do. George Solani, the running game, played probably a bit better than I thought he would at 100 yards and then the touchdown. But Shakir, obviously amazing. Like, everything they do well, like, to start a game, like, have what we've seen this year from not just Mountain West, but other teams, like, this is like their midseason form. Like, what, they have no turnovers, I believe. Is that correct? No fumbles, no interceptions. They found their new tight end there, John Bates. I think he had, what, 4 catches on the first couple drives, I believe it was.
New old tight end, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. But, I mean, like, yeah, that guy. But, like, he had 5 catches. I'm saying they got the tight end early, which it depends what they do. But, like, CT Thomas did all right. Like, it was mostly Shakir, but they got it to everybody. Like, even Andrew Van Buren came and made a couple plays. Touchdown.
Their offensive line looked really good, at least for 1 week. And I know that among Boise State fans, that was kind of like
Yeah, the
it
big
seemed
thing.
like the tipping point, one way or the other. Whether they were going to be able to keep Bachmeier upright, whether they were going to keep him from absorbing a lot of hits. But he looked a lot sharper in his decision making overall. Like there was a couple of scrambles where the plays just didn't work out. But when you leave a game with 187 quarterback rating and you're able to spread the ball around to what, eight different receivers, excuse me. I would say overall that's a success. And the fact that they allowed George Helaini to run for 100 yards on just 14 carries, to me, that kind of speaks volumes. Like, we talked a moment ago about how the fact that Utah State didn't have any big plays. Boise State looked balanced. They had five big plays on the ground and they had five through the air. And I think if you're a Broncos fan, against a defense like this, that was exactly what you were looking for. So again, while it wasn't an A-plus performance,
Is up
I
there.
think, it was probably like an A-minus performance, so, special team quirk aside. I think, you really have to kind of nitpick to find faults with this performance overall.
I guess the only fault, that's just not necessarily a fault, but a plus by Aggies defense. They did get to Bachmar. They had three sacks on them, on the QBs. They had six TFLs, which is nice. Like Kevin Metzenheimer, if I get that properly done there, played pretty well. Like they had a couple of guys, like Cash Gillian, played well for Utah State. So they just need, like, obviously it's not going to save them, but like the defense, there were some bright spots there for getting to the quarterback in the backfield occasionally. So there's that to look if you're looking for some positives for Utah State. Like there's that and Jalen Warren, but to be good, like you're right, the offensive line has to be better, and you can't have a quarterback. Like if you're going to have a quarterback throw for 92 yards, you better be running the triple option, getting 280 on the ground, and that's not happening in Logan. So 42-13, Boise State looks good. Utah State does not look good. But man, so any final thoughts on this particular matchup, Matt?
Nothing I can think of, no.
All right, so know what we need to do here, Matt. So do you know what our buddy Josh Friendland is doing on the website?
We did mention it on the last podcast, yes.
Probably. So he's taking bets on what you want to do, what you're for, literally forcing him to make a bet. That's kind of pressure, right? To put your own money on there, even though it's that's a couple bucks in there. But we're doing that on the website. You're making picks. I'm making picks. Everybody's making picks. And again, we'll get to our Air Force San Jose State kerfuffle later on in the show because we really do need a fall guy at some point if that happens. Maybe that'll be me. But if you guys want to earn some good money, we got a partnership over at MyBookie. That's awesome. Very helpful. So right now, Matt, as we know, Mountainless football is in play, correct? Big Ten play is there. Everything's playing football. Pac-12, well, we'll see in a couple weeks. But you got the World Series, NFL going as we speak. Your buddy Devonta Adams, Matt, doing quite well for the Packers today. Already has a touchdown. Pretty
He's
good.
going off.
Going off against my Texans, so I'm kind of sad about that. But you can do all that, put that money into a payday for yourself over at MyBookie. You can do player props, obviously parlay. So if you want to do a big time parlay, and Matt, you would have done pretty well in some picks this week had you actually had done something, right? So they didn't pay
Yeah,
attention to
for
you.
you may recall on the podcast, or if you read the article on MWire.com, if you'd have followed my picks, you'd have gone 4-1 this week.
Yeah, so pay attention to that stuff. Also, it doesn't matter if it's winners or losers. Like you got underdogs, you can take that to cover or whatever you want to do. It gets a spread, except prop bets. So it's never too late to get any of the actions. Use your sports knowledge, ours, Matt's for sure. Mine, we'll see if I make a pick. Well, I do. But if you sign up over at MyBookie, we got a bonus for you, dollar for dollar, up to $1,000. Use the code OVERTIME to claim that deposit. Just give you a little more help because, Matt, wouldn't it be nice if you start off slowly but you had that extra cushion to know it's not really your money but free money, right?
Free money, always good. I will say that every time.
Definitely. Always good. So use the code OVERTIME to claim your deposit. Also, one thing, this might be the last time we mention because it's coming up soon. I mentioned with Andy on our basketball podcast. You can too. If you want to, Matt, presidential prop bets. So you can bet on who wins the election if you want to. So that's one. So you can bet on literally anything you want, sports and non-sports over there at MyBookie. So sign up today to get that bonus. Again, overtime's the code. So have fun with that. I liked your snicker there because who wants to bet on that stuff, right? It's real life.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
No worries. All right, next game. What do we got next here? The other simulcast, not simulcast, but simultaneous game. The best game of the day. Nevada 37, Wyoming 34. Can we get this type of game like every week from every team?
Wouldn't that be nice?
So can we? I want to first start off saying the worst news of the day, Sean Chambers. Oh, man.
That sucked.
Was it like his literally first play, second play?
It was the first drive. First I think drive. It was like the third down play.
He's taken off the cart, clearly visibly upset, hands in his face, tearing up a little bit. Broken leg. It's like, what could go wrong for him? He just came back from last year being injured with a knee issue, but didn't go through any thing until summertime, full activity. So he's, I'm assuming, gone for the year with that broken leg. Cause that's
I think the early word from Michael Katz was that he's probably going to miss the rest of the season.
Yeah, broken legs, tough to come back, the weight-bearing thing, ankle, leg, broken. But guess good news for Wyoming, they do have a guy named Levi Williams, who's quite good at quarterback in the team.
It took him a little while to get going in this game. And, you know, to me, that was kind of why the game ended up unfolding the way that it did. You know, we talked about it, you know, a couple minutes ago with Utah State's offensive line looking, you know, really overwhelmed, I would say. It seemed like for long stretches of this game that Wyoming's offensive line, and to me it was more surprising, they were in a similar situation. It seemed like Nevada's defensive line, even if they weren't always bringing Williams down, they were putting a lot of pressure on him. And, you know, especially in the first half when they built up that big lead, they were able to really shut down Xavier Valladay for long stretches in the game.
No touchdowns.
And they made Williams like move off of his spot seemingly like every other play. And so while it may not necessarily show up in the stat sheet, you know, you look at the fact that, you know, I think it was in the second quarter or something like that, they didn't complete a single pass.
Yeah, there's a stretch Valladay, where they're turning
the ball. Valladay only had 20 yards. And then I think by halftime, you know, it was, you know, Levi Williams was, I think, completing under 50% of his passes. And, you know, they didn't really have much opportunity even to make it that much of a dent for most of the third quarter. You know, they only completed three passes in the third quarter, only had 9 total plays. A lot of that has to do with Carson Strong, because he came out and they did almost exactly what I thought they should do when we talked about it in the preview podcast, which was go after the secondary, because, you know, like with the talent they have at wide receiver, that was what they were going to want to do. And he came out, he answered the bell. You know, he had 52 attempts, 39 completions, which was a career high, 420 yards, another career high, and 4 touchdowns. And they needed every last one of those yards.
Back-to-back games, 400 yards for him as well.
Yeah, and you know, taken in, you know, tandem with the fact that the running game was, it was really kind of hit or miss again for the Wolfpack. Like, we didn't see Tua Tagovailoa at all. You mentioned that at the onset of this podcast.
Did not dress for the game.
Yeah, Devontae Lee was, you know, he had a couple big runs, but he only had 18 carries for 65 yards. Avery Morrow had, you know, an 18-yard touchdown. So they were able to replace him, you know, well enough, I guess I would say. But there was that stretch basically with, what was it, 4 minutes left in the third quarter and basically all the way through the rest of regulation where they really struggled to move the ball. And, you know, it wasn't really until they rediscovered the passing game in their lone overtime possession that they were able to seal the deal. And I don't know if that's a bigger concern on Nevada's part or if we should just credit Wyoming for the fact that they were able to turn it around despite the fact that their quarterback was basically under fire the entire game. And what we expected to be their strength was really kind of up or down the entire 60 minutes.
That's what I was wondering, because, yeah, the defense, like, first half, really good. Like, it was they always gave up 14 points the first half, but Nevada was moving the ball. Like, look at this passing numbers, yardage numbers. Like, Wyoming's defense wasn't making many stops. They were moving the ball, and Nevada was. And it kind of, and the offense was, like, in struggle mode at 14-6 at the half. And so it seemed like a flip, a reverse. Like, that, I remember that fourth quarter. Like, every time Nevada got the ball, they couldn't do anything. They couldn't move it there in their fourth quarter. Like, after that touchdown, they had, like, where is it here? So I'm scrolling through the play chart here. But they only kicked a field goal. That's all they had, really, in that fourth quarter. And Wyoming comes out, scores 18 points. Like, they had multiple three and outs. They had, four of their drives in the fourth quarter were all three and outs. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, like you're right. Is it the Wyoming defense stepping up because they're figuring things out? But they still got torched. But most of that came in the first three quarters. Until
yeah, final. I mean, it's my opinion that Wyoming came back and almost won that game more mm-hmm. than Nevada lost it.
I'd agree with that. That fourth quarter, like, look at Levi Williams. He's like a freaking freight train. It's both those touchdown runs. He's just cruising through everybody, blowing past his linemen, knocking over linebackers and DBs mm-hmm. in Nevada. It's like, pull his arms up there. It's like, you're not stopped. It's like what it imagined me is, did you ever watch American Gladiators back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
They had that one thing where to go through, if you think about it, it's like a, or like American Ninja Warrior type thing where you're running through a thing where they have like the foam arms next to you on the side where you have to just mm-hmm. put your arms up and just battle through it all because it slows you down just enough. It looks like he was going through that drill, knocking guys off left and right. They're coming here. He's like, you're getting out of my way. I'm scoring a touchdown here. And he just ran through. But also, like for him, he had a solid game. Like for what Wyoming wants to do, these numbers are pretty good offensively. Maybe you want Validate to have a little more production because he did get his 20-plus carries, which we talked about before. He's going to run the ball a lot. You'd like that to maybe get to 100 yards, about 5 yards a carry. But like their offensive numbers they put up are probably what they want to do. Williams runs for about 40-plus yards, throws for over 227, which is fine. Not great, but had they had Sean Chambers in the game, like he did throw the one – he had, did have the one pass, but it would have been more of a running game, and who knows what how it could have turned out because – I'm pretty sure they have a split time because Chambers got in there first, but it would have been more of a running type of game. And maybe that's, I don't know how it turned out, but they're going to be a more balanced team with Levi Williams in the game. But I feel like Wyoming probably could have won this game. Like,
yeah. And I mean, there were some things that really could have turned the game one way or the other. There was, you know, and this was another common theme of the weekend that we also touched upon briefly with Utah State and Boise State. The refs in this game.
Yeah.
Like there was the touchdown catch that was ruled incomplete. And I'm trying to recall who was supposed to have caught the pass. But you know, that was one of those, you know, turning points that really could have played it one way or the other. But then the other big play, which you know, you could make an argument definitely saved the game for the Wolfpack, was the interception in the fourth quarter by Burdale Robbins.
Yeah. And also, like, one thing I thought Wyoming would have had, like, or Nevada, like, Wyoming got, well, a couple things, too. There's that. But also, can we talk about special teams for a minute? Good special oh, yeah. teams?
Both units showed up.
That punt by Wyoming, or no, excuse me, Nevada, excuse me. Like, what was that? Wait, let me get it back. No, they had the Nevada punt. Sorry, they both did really good. But that punt, like, inside the 5 yard line, like, or the deep, like, they had so many deep punts. Like, they started at the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
The one-yard line.
The game time.
99 yards.
99, would like, it could have gone 99 yards if they gone for a touchdown.
Oh, I guess. Well, goal, of course, whatever. Yeah. It started at the one-yard line. Sorry. Touchdown, but, or field goal. And the true freshman kicker, 4-for-4. Like, he made every kick he made for Wyoming. Like,
John Hoyland. Let's shout him out.
That's right. I have him in the little piece I'm working on right now. Like that special teams, both sides, both teams, the punting. Like, even the Wyoming punter, well, not even, but also the Wyoming punter. Like, everybody did well. So, what was, is just a real difference. It came down to me, the two halves where Wyoming's defense played fairly good the first half, only 14 points. Second half was fine. It just seemed they weren't consistent for me because Carson Strong did throw for 400 plus yards, Matt, so I can't say the Wyoming defense did good overall. Mm-hmm. They had spurts where they did well, but like, it seemed to me it's more the Wyoming offense that finally figured things out because I'm wondering. I think why maybe they started slowly, and I've no. This is just me kind of throwing darts and thinking where Chambers would have been the guy most often because they're going to run their type of offense, and they kind of had to switch up more than they wanted to a passing type of game. And so, maybe,
yeah, I mean, I think so because I think you know on the one hand you could make a case that Wyoming maybe did what they wanted to by making Nevada one dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you know, with a lot of air raid teams, it can get to the point, and I think you can make a case that it did in this game, where you know you have a big lead, but you don't know how to close.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the fact that Wyoming did end up with 8 tackles for loss, to me that kind of tells part of that story. Like you know they were able to bottle up Lee and Morrow for the most part, and really forced Strong and his receivers to try to win the game by you know bleeding the clock, which is not necessarily what a passing game is always built to do.
Yeah.
I think, you know, from a coach's standpoint or from an inside the locker room standpoint, inside the film room standpoint, like you could make a case that, giving up as many yards through the air as they did wasn't necessarily that big of a deal because they were able to come back and almost win that game anyway.
That's true. Like, so would I know Nevada won. This might be a dumb question to ask, but is Nevada the better team of the two?
I mean, I think right now, yeah, I would have said so even before this game.
Okay. One thing I do like to point out, I was just curious. One thing I like to point out, we know how we mentioned the Wyoming receivers who they got. Well, they got Isaiah Nayor, who likes to go deep. So he had a 45-yard long pass. They threw to, what, 8 different receivers. Mm-hmm. Valade did catch 7 in the backfield, so that makes up a bit for his rushing. I don't want to say he wasn't great, but what we've used to him doing last year. So he had, yeah, he had 130 yards just about combined. So they need to they separate the receivers, but if they're throwing just to Valade and giving him 30 touches a game, they're going to have to find somebody else. And Nayor did pretty good with that long TD pass 3 for 102, but everybody else had like 1 catch. Gunnar Gentry had the 2 and the touchdown. Mm-hmm. I think they need to spread that out a bit more. Whether keep the production the same, but you don't want Valade. It's like if he's getting, I know it's a fewer games this year, but 30 touches, that's a lot, man.
I mean, I think you can be encouraged by the fact that Wyoming was able to discover, something of a big play element, mm-hmm. where even though Williams really only completed 50% of his passes, you have, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys, among those 8 that had a catch of at least 15 yards. And I think if you're Wyoming, if you're a team that's going to rely on a really bruising ground game and kind of an all or nothing passing attack, then I think you can live with that. I think, maybe a little more efficiency on the ground game will help them in the long run. But, to me, it's not necessarily a red flag that they're spreading the ball around and a lot of 50-50 passes, again, that could have gone their way and just didn't in this particular instance.
Agree. Anything else you want to add on this game? Let me ask you one more question. I'm doing my quarterback ranking this week. Should Carson Strong be number 1?
I think he should get a longer look, yeah.
Okay. Who else? Hank Bachmeyer?
Him and one other quarterback we'll talk about in a moment.
All right, what game are we going to next year? Are we going to the San Diego? Oh no, Hawaii Fresno State game.
Yep.
Is it the other quarterback in this game, Matt?
Yeah, it would be in my mind Siobhan Cordero.
When is the first? I don't remember. I need to look it up. But when's the last time Hawaii's had 200 rushers? I have no idea when that was.
That is an excellent question. I wish I had thought to look that up. I mean, to me, the big story of this game is like, look at the run pass ratio and this doesn't account for like sacks or anything like that. So you can tinker with it a little bit, but you credit Hawaii for 53 rushes and only 30 pass attempts.
What is this option team? What's going on?
it's the running gun, baby.
Right. That's offense. Graham,
that's GJ Kinn. That's, Brennan Marion and everybody else on the offensive side of the ball.
We should mention 34-19 in favor of Hawaii. We got to put that out there, Matt, one more time.
Yeah,
but yeah, like the offense, like I just cut highlights on this because I couldn't watch it live and didn't go to the app after, so you watch it more than me. But like Cordero, it's like he didn't make mistakes. Like I put in my quick preview I did for how they're gonna win, like just don't be Cole McDonald, because last year McDonald, we've seen him try to hit those tight windows, he would never hit them, or it would be a 50-50, it'd be a disastrous play. It wouldn't just be an overthrow out of bounds, it would be I got this guy here but the defender's so close he'll pick me off or something. He, mm-hmm. Cordero, yeah, no passing touchdowns, had 2 in the ground. But his offense, it's still kind of what they wanted to do last year, a lot of passing. It's just not throwing 50-plus times. And I really think with the run and shoot, what Nick Rolovich said, they want the quarterback to run some, but this was not, is a slightly different enough where when he's running, it's not the same when it's 5 receivers and 1 in the quarterback, you know what I mean? They put guys back to him next to him, running backs like Miles Reed, 109 yards there. They had even Colvin Turner had 60 yards and 2 touchdowns. Like, if this Hawaii team is this balanced and we know they have the receivers, like Rico Busi, first game back in like 2 years, 86 yards. And Jared Smart, 80 over 80 yards. Like, they're not going to be as explosive passing the ball, I don't think. Just 300-yard guys or a different 100-yard guy every week. But they have enough offense to, Cordero's not playing great. All right, we'll just run the ball and be fine.
Well, and when you look at how Fresno State responded on defense, they didn't really have an answer for that ground game either, because, yeah, they had 6 TFLs, but, that's mostly tied up in the fact that they had 4 sacks, and Kwame Jones had himself a game where, he had 3 sacks by himself for the Bulldogs, but, know, you're looking at that trio of Turner, Reed, and Cordero, and, you know, without doing the math, you know, how many yards per carry did they average?
Hawaii?
Yeah, it's got to be like close to 7.
It's,
you know, it's 6.1 yeah. with the sacks
included.
Like that. If you remove that sack yardage and things like that, it's got to be a lot closer to 7, if not more so.
Like, let's say they got 40 yards in sacks. That's 363. So that's, yeah, closer. It's pretty cool. Basically 7 yards. So I'd say at least 6.5 if we're being extremely conservative there.
And that was really one of the big concerns I had about this game. Although, you know, my biggest concern, I think, manifests itself in more in the, you know, are the Bulldogs going to be able to generate a pass rush? And, you know, I think you could still say outside of Jones, maybe not. Because, you know, Cordero was able to, you know, throw on the run. He was able to make plays and complete 2/3 of his passes, even if he didn't have any passing touchdowns. But, you know, he took care of the ball. They won the, I think they only turned the ball over one time, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, for a, you know, against the Bulldogs offense that it looked like for the most part, they didn't have that much trouble moving the ball, but they really shot themselves in the foot. Like, both teams averaged at least 6 yards per play. The Bulldogs were, you know, right at 6 and the Warriors were at 6.7. But the big difference in the game, at least in my mind, was the fact that, you know, Hawaii was +3 in turnovers.
Clearly,
and
yeah.
I think, mm-hmm. you know, Ronnie Rivers looked fine to me. I think, you know, maybe you could have given him a few more touches, you know, but he had 18 carries, 79 yards and a score on the ground. I think you saw what you wanted to out of him and out of Jordan Mims, who had a couple nice runs. I think you mostly saw what you wanted to out of the passing game, because while nobody really stood out in the same way that Rico Busey did for Hawaii, you know, they were able to complete passes to 9 different receivers. You know, 5 different guys had at least 2 catches. You know, they were able to kind of share the wealth and keep Hawaii from really focusing on anybody. But, you know, Jake Haener's got some work to do, because at least for 1 week, he looked, you know, more Jorge Reyna than Marcus McMarion.
Yeah, I think the difference in the game was that last interception. Like, they were in this game down 24-16 after the missed field goal. For, that's like the key point of the game. Like, if you, like, they're, it's 17-13, back up. Interception leads to a high touchdown. They respond to field goal. Then Fresno's defense comes up big with that missed field goal. They get to, but then they just, they're down 8 points. They get the ball, and then, so what, 6 plays later in Hawaii territory, that interception, I think, killed the game, because you're one possession from winning, or at least tying the game. Had they scored any points there, who knows what happened. But I think that's like the biggest part of the game. After that missed field goal, they played pretty good, but then the offense moves the ball, and then there's just that last interception. It was 24-16.
Both teams were able to land some real haymakers, I think. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Hawaii had basically 13 combined big plays, you know, 5 through the air and 8 on the ground, which, again, kind of a surprise. But Fresno State had even more big plays. Like, they had 15, and a lot of that came down to big plays in the passing game. So I think, you know, Haener was probably the right choice to be the starting quarterback, but I think he's just going to clean up the mistakes, because there was the second interception that Eugene Ford had, which, you know, again, Eugene Ford had 2 interceptions in this game. That was just like a mistake. Like, there really wasn't anybody in that area. And I can only assume he was trying to throw it out of bounds and it just didn't get there, because Ford was able to pick it off pretty easily. But, you know, I think
the third one tipped, went off 2 players, I believe. And that's kind of just an unfortunate pick. It went off the Hawaii guy hit it, tried to catch it, tipped up high, then whoever was behind him caught. I don't know if it was Ford or Pritchard there at the end. I think it's Pritchard. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's Pritchard. But it tipped off a Hawaii guy. It just got knocked in the air. And that's like, yeah, the throw wasn't great because it didn't hit his receiver, because the Hawaii guy got a hand up. But that's still an unfortunate interception where it's not necessarily his fault, where the ball gets tipped and it's up for free-for-all for anybody.
Yeah, and especially since the Bulldogs in this game had a huge field position advantage. You know, they had both teams had 12 drives, and the Bulldogs were starting at their own 37 on average. And while Hawaii was starting at their own 24, you know, you take that into consideration, as well as the fact that Hawaii was able to turn those 4 turnovers into 17 points. When you're looking at a final difference of 15 points, that's kind of the story of the game right there. I mean, that and the fact that Hawaii was basically kind of unstoppable on third downs. Did you notice that?
They're what, 12 of 17, I believe? 11
of 16. I mean, you're going to have a hard time winning a lot of games with that kind of performance on defense.
And 5-12 for Fresno is not terrible. That's not too bad.
No, it's not. But I mean, there's some glaring things that really kind of tell you the story of this game. And I think those are a couple of those.
So with Fresno losing, I believe they're much improved over last year. The interceptions.
I mean, I think the offense looks about as sharp as last year. I think the mistakes really killed them in the same way that it clearly really took them apart last year. But, you know, I don't really feel much better about the defense than I did coming into this game. And I think that they could get themselves into a lot of shootouts. But if the offense continues to make mistakes, they could play their way out of a lot of potential shootouts as well.
Just like this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do have to shore up the rush defense more than the pass defense. Because again, no passing touchdowns against this Y team. We knew we'd throw. We just didn't know how much. So I'd still say Fresno's in a decent position. Like, from what we've seen, like, they're better than UNLV, clearly. They're going to be better than New Mexico. Like, I did my power poll. I put them, they're still in the bottom half just because of win losses early on. But, like, out of everybody who played, like, they're still not, like, I don't think they're on the same level as Nevada or Wyoming. I don't think they're quite there yet. Not far, but they're better than Utah State. So they're probably, like, in that middle tier just above CSU, I think, if that makes sense. Like, just about, right about halfway.
Yeah.
So I think that's where they're at. And if they get rid of those turnovers, could they beat Nevada? Maybe. Could they beat, well, if they play well? I mean, I don't know if they're on the schedule in front of me, but I think they could be competitive in a lot more games than we think.
I definitely agree.
All right, so are we going to the San Diego State game?
Yeah, let's do it.
Does Marcus Arroyo want to go back to Oregon?
I mean, he's got to be frustrated today, kind of going over the tape of everything.
Our buddy, we know, Tyler Bischoff mentioned if Max Gilliam gets playing time, the other quarterbacks are crappy. Essentially,
it could be a long season. I believe were his exact words.
I'll paraphrase. Come on, let me do that. But
even mentioned the final score yet. It was 34-6, but that was the most like 50-0, 34-6 game I've ever seen in my life.
Couple things about this game I liked when I watched it. Carson Baker did what a San Diego State quarterback needs to do, except he did not get above 50% passing. I'm not starting negative, guys. I picked you 7-1, so get off my back if you're yelling at me already. I'm just saying the 100, just over 130 yards. Like, I think if an asset quarterback gets 125 and a TD, that's doing their job, which he did. I'd rather have him go 15-25, just saying. But running game is back with their 6 running backs on the depth chart to start. Greg Bell, Keegan Williams, Chance Bell, even Jordan Bird with just the 3 carries. Those 3 guys, they rushed for 287 yards. Like, can we just say the running game's back for the Aztecs with Greg Bell doing pretty good with the TD and 111 yards?
Well, let's talk about Baker for a moment, because I do want to put these numbers into perspective.
Yes.
Because I really do think you kind of have to look at this game as being like the first half and the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And when, you know, when the game was still, you know, mostly competitive, I guess you would say.
When was that?
Or at least marginally competitive.
First quarter?
You know, it's worth keeping in mind that Carson Baker was 10 of his first 15.
He was,
and yes, he looked pretty sharp. You know, they put him out on rollouts. He was finding, you know, receivers on the sidelines. He was making throws. You know, I think they too, if I remember correctly, like right before halftime, they had a completion to Daniel Bellinger, I think it was. Or maybe it was Jesse Matthews. I can't remember who. Another review that was probably blown, in my opinion, by the refs. So, yeah, I think all things considered, you know, what you wanted to see from this offense was a fast start. And I think, you know, when you take into account what they were able to do in that first half, especially.
Second quarter, too. 20 points.
Yeah, I mean, you recently kind of, look at the drive chart, and that tells you everything you need to know. You know, 11 plays, 85 yards and a score, 9 plays, 80 yards and a score, you know, your short field, they turned into another touchdown. And even though it kind of tapered off after that, and they more or less kind of sat on the ball for the most of the second half.
Yeah.
I would say mission accomplished from what you wanted to see. Like, we wanted to see the running game come out and be stronger in between the two Bells and Keegan Williams. I think you got that. And you wanted to see Baker be able to make plays, you know, within a new look kind of evolved offense. And even though the final totals don't look all that great, I think what you wanted to see from him in that first half, you got that from him. And so I think there's a lot of positives if you're looking at the Aztecs offense through that particular lens.
No, there definitely are. And like, they threw the ball to eight different guys you mentioned, eight or nine. Like, mm-hmm. there's no one standout guy because three players caught two passes. And so that's good and not good, I guess. But it's good. Finding more people is obviously good. So you want to maybe find a guy eventually.
And the defense looked as sharp as I think you would have expected them to. You know, with 14 tackles for loss as a team, five sacks, Caden McDonald had himself a game with 2.5 sacks and 3 tackles for loss. Special teams showed up. They were pretty sharp. You know, I think it was Tariq Thompson that had the block punt, or was it Trenton Thompson?
I think Trenton Thompson, I believe. They had the second year, or the another blocked punt. They got deep in UNLV territory, so there's that.
But, you know, and Matt Ariza pulled double duty, which mm-hmm. I did not expect. You know, he had 2 short field goal tries that were a success, and he averaged almost 50 yards a punt. So I think, you know, if you're looking for a team that had an A, as close to an A-plus game as you could ask for this weekend, it's probably San Diego State.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. One thing with UNLV, besides them playing to 3 quarterbacks, like, they never gave Charles Williams the ball until it's too late. Not that there's ever a chance in this game, I didn't think, but why are they not giving the ball more? Like, he didn't really break out till later in the game.
Like, he had basically like 5 touches in the first half.
Yeah,
and by that point they were down 27-0.
Why are you not giving this guy the ball to start the game? You're playing 3 quarterbacks, coach. It's like, you have the, I would argue, you have the best player on the whole field, Charles Williams. Maybe not, like, it's pretty close, him or like Tariq Thompson on San Diego State defense, but you have possibly the best player out of the whole game. Whenever you guys on the field, he's the best player. And you're not giving him the ball. It's like, give him the ball more. He ended up with 80 yards, which is fine, but they needed him to do a lot more. It's like, get him the ball. 20 carries is too low, too late. You're down 27-0 at half. It's like, I know you're down, but you still need to give him the ball when you're rotating Kenyon Oblad, Justin Rogers, Max Gilliam got the bulk of it. You have a new quarterback.
There was a point in the game where all 3 quarterbacks combined for 5 completions on 9 attempts for 0 yards.
But it's like, you have the new guys. If you have a threat of running game, it's going to help your passing game. Does he not realize that? Like, that's the frustrating part. Like, lean on the guy and then help your quarterbacks where there's uncertainty. And so now he goes into next week. I guess Gilliam's the lead guy because he played the most in this game, but I'm not feeling confident about any quarterback.
Question mark. Yeah, I mean, maybe. It's really hard to say at this point.
I'm just saying he played the most. That's why. That's the only reason, but defense wasn't great either. It's like, not that we expect a lot of UNLV, but like, I put them last in the power poll this week behind New Mexico because they were that bad.
Well, you and me both, man.
Good. Perfect. Join the train. Join the last place train Rebels, I guess. I don't know. But like, it's a team where I don't think we're expecting them to win, but I would expect it to be a bit more competitive. Like, and Aztecs could have scored 60 points probably if they wanted to. You know what I mean? Like, they could have put
The Rebels, I put this out there when I wrote the winners and losers column. You know, they averaged 2.9 yards per play, which was basically the worst offensive performance they've had in 2 years. And they were lucky to get there because they had they had exactly 2 good drives all game long. They had their lone touchdown drive, which was 13 plays, 81 yards. And they had an 18-play, 73-yard drive that was ended on a turnover by Downs, and they went backwards 11 yards.
Oh, man.
By the way, San Diego State went and turned that into a touchdown in 5 plays.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of tells you everything you need to know about just how much work there is to be done on both sides of the ball for this team. And that doesn't even get into the special teams. Like, they had a blocked punt. They had, you know, missed extra point. It was just ugly all the way around.
Yeah, and who do they got next week? UNLV is taking on
Nevada.
Oh boy!
So an even better Nevada day for the Cannon.
There's no way it's turning red, staying red, right?
I mean, if they lose that game, the honeymoon's over, right?
I guess already.
If they aren't competitive in that game, the honeymoon is over.
Yeah, because Nevada's offense is better than San Diego State's offense. I think we can safe to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But all right, so we got the next game.
Yeah,
is this the final game already?
The surprise of the weekend, maybe.
San Jose State beats Air Force, scoreless first half, which I was like, what is going on here? a goal line stand and a defense we felt would get run all over basically shut down the Falcons' run option attack.
I mean, it was pretty modest performance by the Falcons. And I think that when you think of like a scoreless first half, you think of it as being like really ugly football.
Not really.
I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think both defenses just came out to play.
Yeah, there's a few plays. But yeah, I think it's more of a defensive effort than guys' bad plays or just any inconsistencies or wild throws or an ill-advised pitch that goes back 20 yards that bounces 18 times and three guys dive to get it. But no, it was a good defensive first half. Ended up being 17-6 for San Jose State. Nick Starkel, the starter, played quite well. Nick Nash came in and ran the ball a handful of times, no pass attempts. Was this a big deal enough for Air Force by not having two offensive linemen, or why the game and running game went so poorly?
I was going to ask you the same thing because because we knew they were going to be without Nolan Laufenberg ahead of time because of contact tracing protocols for COVID-19. Kyle Krebs was a name that came in a little bit later, according to Brent Bergman of the Colorado Springs Gazette on Twitter. To me, I kind of have to wonder, because you're talking about one of the best offensive line units in the country, and you take out two of those starters, you kind of figure it has to make a little bit of difference, especially when you look at where they really kind of made their hay against Navy. And like we talked about in the preview, where they made their hay against this same Spartans defense last year with a fullback dive. Timothy Jackson was relatively quiet. His longest run was only 9 yards, and they held him to 60 overall on 15 carries. Matthew Merla wasn't really that much better. He had 3 carries, 19 yards, which is okay, but a long of 15, so that lets you know that they were able to really put the clamps on them. And Caden Remsburg was really quiet too. He only had 3 carries for 6 yards.
Wonder what's going on with him, because last time they played versus Navy, he's like fourth in line in carries as well.
I mean, they just put a lot more, I think they put a lot more emphasis on trying to beat San Jose State to the edges, because they put the ball in Hezekiah Daniels' hands a lot. He kept the ball a lot, 13 carries, but he only had 25 yards, so it didn't necessarily work out. And the fact that Brandon Lewis had a much larger workload kind of tells me that same story, 9 carries, 60 yards. I guess you could say he was the most effective offensive playmaker they had in this game, because he also led the team with 6 catches for 36 yards as well. Mm-hmm. I kind of think that was the story of the game, but I think that that's a credit to San Jose State's linebackers that they were able to really play sideline to sideline, and especially their safeties too. Their tandem of Trey Jenkins and Trey Webb, the two Treys. I kind of feel like they need a cooler nickname or something like that.
That's true. Yeah, we'll think of something.
But it was really the spine of this Spartans defense that came to play. Kyle Harmon had 14 tackles in a TFL. Webb had 11 tackles. Jenkins had 7 tackles. Ali Matau had 5 tackles. So you just kind of go down the line and you see who really stepped up. And, it's those guys you expect to be rangy, to be able to make plays sideline to sideline, that stepped up and did the job.
Yeah, they were like, especially look at that fourth, the goal line stand. Like, they tried to go to the right side, and they just got, Air Force just got stonewalled right there and couldn't convert. And this, I don't know what to make of this game a little bit. I do, but I don't.
Air Force, you kind of have to grade everybody on a curve, I think.
A little bit, yeah. But also, Air Force, here's my thing, too. They lose two offensive linemen that are good, one really good at Nolan. But it's like, if you're that good, you think you're back. Because it's a system thing, too. It's not like it with the Air Force, it's timing. Maybe it's, here's the thing. We knew Nolan was out for I think, by Tuesday or Wednesday. So they're already practicing with their backups in there. You would think maybe their depth isn't that great. But this offense, there's two ways I can put it. If it's negative, it's a timing thing, and they didn't get to practice enough with this team. With the the new guys, whether it's the, because they switch guys around too. It's like it wasn't okay. Center and in this Nolan position, you're going to be sliding in. They're rotating guys around to set them up to their best to fit the needs of who's coming into replace. So the offensive line was switched. So the bad thing is a timing thing where they didn't have enough practice to get through, because option based, it's like up the middle dive. Okay, that's simple enough. But if you want to keep an engaging with your defensive lineman or defensive end or linebacker, it's a timing to know what's going to be done. It's repetition. And if they didn't get that, that's not good. But also you think, all these guys have been in the system before, it shouldn't be that much difference. But apparently it was. But also, I don't want to say it's all Air Force's fault for that. They're not going well. You mentioned Spartans' credit. We basically crapped on their rush defense for years. They've been terrible. And yes, it was 206 yards and 4.2 carry, but no touchdowns. Only, if I'm correct on this, only four rushing plays over 10 yards, so no huge running play. And
yeah,
no,
I mean, if you go back over their last few, you know, head-to-head matchups, going back to when they started becoming conference foes back in 2013, this was by far the best per carry average that the Spartans have held the Falcons to.
Yeah, and that is what's going to be good for them going forward, playing any rushing team, because it's kind of, we always joked, oh, their pass defense is so good, it's because nobody passes against them half the time. It's, mm-hmm. But they had good players too, but like they got New Mexico, well, assuming air quotes New Mexico next week, if it's going to happen, like that could be a victory. They could be sitting at 2-0, and when they go to San Diego State against a pretty good rushing team, that could be, and what we've seen the past 2 years, I honestly wouldn't be shocked, as we mentioned in previews in offseason, the Spartans were going and upset San Diego State. And now we see they have a rush defense, and Nick Starkle, who looks to be just maybe a step behind Josh Love from last year.
Yeah, he had the one interception, but I think if you're a Spartans fan, what you like to see is that they were able to win on offense, you know, without a big game from Trey Walker, because, you know, he only had four targets, but he did have four catches, 38 yards. It was, you know, Bailey Gaither who stepped up, eight catches, 110 yards. Derek Deese at the tight end position stepped up. He only had three targets, but he had two catches and two touchdowns. You know, I think you could still make a case that they need to work on the running game, because that was still, you know, very much a work in progress against the Falcons. They had ran the ball, what was it, 30 times, 68 yards.
Not good.
That's a 2.3 yards per carry average. So there's still work to do there. But, you know, I think if you were expecting the team to be pass first, you can be encouraged by the early results from Starkle.
I definitely see. So is there a concern about the Air Force? Is it, like you mentioned, Air Force and your winners and losers, they could still be in the mix, because maybe just losing those two linemen was that big a deal. And if they're back next week, it's business as usual.
I mean, I think it really makes me wonder how volatile they will be,
because they got Boise next week too. So,
you know, because we had a similar kind of conversation about Nevada last year, where they won a lot of close games, but there was a lot of games where they just looked out of sync on one side of the ball or the other. And I'm kind of wondering if we'll see a variation of that, where, you know, maybe 1 week they come out looking like gangbusters like they did against Navy, and, you know, the next week they scuffle on offense and, you know, they put together a decent defensive performance. But, you know, maybe the questions about depth, the questions about experience creep in sometimes.
Also,
I think that's something to keep an eye on from week to week.
Also, maybe Navy just sucks.
That too.
Could there be that big consideration where Navy's just awful?
They did lose this week, did they not?
I'm pulling up their stuff right now. They lost to BYU 55-3. They lost to Houston's pretty good. They lost to Houston 37-21. But they only beat Temple by 2, and they only beat ECU by 4. And ECU mm-hmm. is garbage. So they are 3-3, but against teams that seem to be above average, they're not very close. Double-digit losses to BYU, Air Force. Assuming we think Air Force is decent, and then Houston.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Navy's just crappy. We're grading off of that a little bit. What's your concern level then with Air Force going forward?
I mean, I don't know if I'm overly concerned, but I want to see something that's a little bit closer to what we saw against Navy than against San Jose State, and I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, getting back to 100% and getting their personnel back on offense. You know, the offensive line, I think, makes a difference for them.
It does. It'll have to be next week versus Boise State, because that's a big turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
A big team who also noted just now, AP poll dropped. Boise State is 25th. And San Diego State's getting 1 point. So they got a 25th place vote from somebody. So those are the only two teams ranked or getting consideration for ranked, if I'm correct here, double check. Yes, those are the two. But, yeah, if they're going to turn around, like, assume they get Nolan back, they get everybody else back on their offensive line, maybe. It's like, I'm not going to pick them to beat Boise State, but if they're not at full strength of their best unit on the team, on the field, they're going to struggle and may not be close.
Mm-hmm.
All right, anything else you'd add? Because we wrapped up our recap, I keep saying preview. Five games of the week. Are we going to officially just go ahead and start saying week 9 instead of me going opening weekend for a million times?
Yeah, we'll just go with what everybody else is doing.
Right. I tried to mix it up. I'm like, week 8, but it's also the opening weekend. So I want to go that route. So we'll be back. Do we have Thursday games already next week?
You know what? I don't have the schedule in front of me. I
I believe so. So this means our show will probably be out Wednesday, so possibly. We'll figure out.
Yes, we do. We got Colorado State at Fresno State on Thursday night.
All right. Is that an FS1 game?
No, it is CBS Sports Network.
All right. So take care of that business and get your CBS Sports Network. But we'll be back eventually talking to preview all next week's games for week 9, as I'm saying it properly. Website, MWR.com, Twitter, Facebook, Mountless Wire, all that good stuff, MWC Wire. And yeah, we'll be back next time and just look for all some fun stuff this week. Quarterback rankings coming up. We got your Matt's winners and losers. We'll have some news coming up and some other bowl projections. Even though we didn't mention Matt's, Los Angeles Bowl is in limbo now.
That's true.
So here's my suggestion really quick to wrap it up. Should we just do screw bowl games and just play a non-conference game of your choice? Wouldn't that be better?
Yeah, why not?
Wouldn't that be better?
It would be better.
I think that should be a thing, especially... I'm not just saying it to say it, but everybody's bowl eligible. It's going to be a popularity contest. Why not allow teams who just play some non-conference game? Like, remember the Mac and Mount West kind of half hinted at a postseason challenge in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
So why not match up with some other conference or play some other regional game if you're not in the bowl game, just to get one more game? If you're playing like 7 or 8 games, why not do that?
Might as well, right?
I would like that to happen, so we'll see. But that's something to keep an eye out. But we'll be back next time. Any questions, comments, MWC Wire. If you like the show, tell a couple friends, and we'll see you next time.